A logo appears in bold slanting letters over a blue planet in space. Turner. Now, a logo of a thick-maned lion framed by a ring of film. Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer. Now, words appear against a drawing of a lion. Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer presents, in a photograph, a young man and woman stand on either side of an older couple. Words appear, Judge Hardy's family in Life Begins for Andy Hardy, copyright 1941. With Lewis Stone as Judge James K. Hardy, Mickey Rooney as Andy Hardy, Faye Holden as Mrs. Emily Hardy, Anne Rutherford as Polly Benedict, Sarah Hayden as Aunt Millie Forrest, Patricia Dane as Janet Hicks, Ray McDonald as Jimmy Frobisher, and Judy Garland as Miss Betsy Booth. Screenplay by Agnes Christine Johnson, directed by George B. Seitz. Now, in black and white film, an operator plugs a wire into a switchboard.
Miss Betsy Booth, this is Long Distance reporting on your call to Judge James K. Hardy at Carville 2339. There's no answer. Shall we keep trying?
Will you please keep trying, operator? It's very important. It's almost a matter of life and death. No, I can't talk to anybody that answers. I have to talk to Judge Hardy himself. And you mustn't use my name because I don't want anybody but Judge Hardy to know I'm calling. So you will keep after Judge Hardy, won't you? Thank you.
Betsy returns to a ballroom.
Excuse me, Betsy. I didn't listen, honest. But couldn't you get your call?
No, and I can't understand it. It's graduation night in Carville, same as it is here in New York. I suppose Andy Hardy will dance till scandalously late. But Judge Hardy just isn't the type to stay out all night.
You're always talking about that Andrew Hardy. What's he got that I haven't got?
Now, Kurt, behave yourself. Remember, you're only 15, and I'm practically, well, kind of more or less engaged.
You're going to marry Andrew Hardy?
Well, I wouldn't go so far as to say that the date is set, but when Andy left me in New York last year, he promised he'd come back to me someday, and I just know he hasn't even looked at another girl since. I hope.
She raises an eyebrow. Now, in a suburban home, the tall, balding Judge Hardy hurries down a staircase, tying his robe closed. He glances back upstairs before answering a candlestick phone.
Hello. Yes, this is Judge James K. Hardy. New York. All right, I'll be here.
His wife rushes downstairs.
Now, don't break it to me gently, James. The one thing that really upsets a person is breaking bad news gently. Andrew's in jail, isn't he?
No, Andy's not in jail. There's a call coming from New York. Must be Bob Wagner. You remember, I went to college with him. I've been expecting a call or a telegram. Now, there's nothing to be worried about.
Well, then what do you get me so worked up for?
Me get you worked up, Emily?
Why, you leaped out of that bedroom as if the world was coming to an end.
And your version of the world coming to an end is Andy in jail?
Well, what's yours?
No.
He kisses her cheek.
You go to bed, Mrs. Hardy.
Oh, it's lucky somebody in this family keeps their head in an emergency. Good idea.
As Mrs. Hardy heads back upstairs, the judge watches her, then sits to answer the phone.
Hello. Who? Oh, hello, Betsy. No, Andrew's not home. You can speak freely.
Oh, Judge, I'm simply panic-stricken. I went to bed without asking the telephone company to cancel my call, and I'm simply curdled with remorse. But as long as sleep's been ruined for both of us, I might as well tell you I'm coming to Carville tomorrow. Mother's gone to Washington. She says I could come and visit Grandmother, but I simply couldn't cope with the situation without talking to you first. Hi there, I'm all out of breath.
Well, what seems to be the difficulty, Betsy?
Judge, I simply must know what's going on between your son and that Polly Benedict, or else I might come to Carville and make a perfect go to myself.
Well, Betsy, dear, the gods are smiling on you. Andy and Polly Benedict were starting a first-class quarrel when they left the graduation dance tonight.
They were! Oh, bliss!
She lies back onto a satiny pillow. Now, outside the Hardy house, a shiny Dodge convertible pulls to a stop in the driveway. The short, clean-cut driver scoots over and exits from the passenger side door. The young man looks up toward the house, then catches the car door before it slams. He steps onto the porch and stops to remove his shoes before stealthily entering the dim house. Glancing around, the young man carefully closes the door behind him. He steps further inside. He stops short. As he winces at a grandfather clock, Judge Hardy steps from another room.
Good morning, Andrew.
Andrew trips, then turns to the judge.
Good morning, Dad. Aren't you up kind of late?
Aren't you getting home kind of late?
Well, having graduated from high school, I've got a right to stay out as late as I want.
The judge quiets him.
Haven't I? But you're hot tonight, Dad.
Andrew,
Andy removes his jacket. The name Susie and a phone number are written on his shirt.
What in the name of common sense is all that?
Well, some girl, she's just amusing herself.
I don't believe Polly Benedict would be very amused if she saw it.
Andy looks at his shirt.
Well, Polly and we broke off for good tonight.
Oh, I see. Who's, Susie?
Susie? Oh, she's a little girl I met at the dance, so she gave me her phone number. No special significance, just a number in case of emergency.
I have an emergency for you. You meet me in my chambers tomorrow at 12 o'clock.
Something serious?
Yeah, your future. So you get yourself some sleep now. And pick up those shoes. I nearly broke my neck over this book you left on the floor.
Oh, thanks. I guess Mom was so excited about graduation, she forgot to pick things up.
Forgot to pick things up. You expect to spend the next 50, 60 years of your life with your mother waiting on you?
Oh, I hope not. Expect someday to carve out a little home of my own.
That's what I want to talk to you about. I hadn't figured on settling your future so soon, but something requires quick action.
Dad, about Polly Benedict. She's going back east to college, so I had no choice in the matter. I couldn't let her think I was going to carry a torch.
Carry a torch?
Yeah, you know, love life without a future, a disappointed drizzle drip, a wolf without a frill.
What in the world are you talking about?
Look, I'll explain it to you. You wouldn't want your only son walking down the streets and having everybody laugh at him because he got the poisoned pan from his dilly, would you?
The judge motions upstairs.
Be quiet.
Morning. A clock reads 11:05. Mom! Andy comes down in an undershirt and boxers.
I graduated last night, and I don't have to go to school no more ever.
Oh, I'm a free man.
He picks up his mother and spins her.
Dear, dear. I'm afraid you're growing right out of your poor old mother's arms.
Oh, I'd never do that, Mom.
He kisses her neck.
Brush your teeth this morning?
Mm-hmm. Sure.
He shows his teeth.
Oh, dear, our boy's certainly growing up when he remembers his teeth. I'm getting sentimental. Here, I pressed your white trousers for you.
Oh, thanks, Mom.
Now that you're getting such a big, grown-up man, I guess this is about the last time your mother will ever help you to dress.
Oh, well, a fella has to grow up eventually, or he'll be a baby with a beard.
Here's your favorite shirt.
Thanks.
I tightened the buttons for you.
Swell.
Now guess.
Guess what?
Guess what I got for your breakfast?
What has Mrs. Hardy got for my breakfast? Fried sausages? My favorite breakfast? Thank you.
I don't suppose it's very good for your digestion. But then they tell me the Eskimos feed their babies blubber. Andy, what is blubber?
Blubber? It's seal meat. They also use it as oil to burn in lamps.
It's wonderful. Must be a great saving in electricity.
Mom! Woo! I not only graduated, but I've got myself a new car. However, there is something that's bothering me, and it's Dad.
Well, you've got to meet your father at noon, but that could mean trouble.
Oh, no? Well, you don't know your husband. What is it, Mom? Give your son a tip.
All I know is it's something to do with Dr. Wagner.
Dr. Wagner? Isn't that Dad's college president?
Mm-hmm.
Something tells me my life is catching up with me fast. Leave my tie alone. Mom, would you speak to Dad and see if he'll let me put my new car in the garage and leave the family sedan out in the driveway, huh?
We'll see.
Now, fully dressed, Andy winks to his mother and heads outside. In the driveway, Andy looks around. His convertible is gone. He runs to the garage, slides to a stop, and pokes his head in.
Mom, call the police. My car's been stolen. Mom, I left my car right here in the driveway last night. I even looked in the garage and it's not there.
Well, it looks like the thief left his calling card.
A note attached to a flower.
Dear Andy, I put your car in Grandmother's garage to get it out of the sun. Betsy. Betsy here? What's a child of her years doing driving such a high-powered car as mine?
He grits his teeth and storms off. Next door, Betsy buffs Andy's car.
Be careful, Betsy. You'll scratch the paint.
Hi there, playmate. Don't worry, I won't scratch it. This is Grandma's best towel. Oh, Andy, it's marvelous to see you. And your new car is marvelous. Now, look, I've lost 6 pounds. It was mostly baby fat anyway. Isn't that marvelous?
It's nice to see you, Betsy, but...
But she didn't answer my last 9 letters.
It was only 8 letters.
Well, I guess it's something for you to remember how many letters you didn't answer.
I'm sorry, but...
Oh, let's rise above it. Andrew, your breakfast ready. And don't forget, your father expects you at 12 sharp.
All right, Mom. Excuse me, Betsy.
Okay.
Here I am, graduated from high school, and I'm still a slave to my parents' whimsies.
Now at a train station.
Hello, Bob.
Hello, dear.
This is my son, Andrew. Andrew, this is Dr. Wagner, president of Wainwright College.
I'm glad to meet you, sir.
And I want to meet you. Though naturally, Jim Hardy's son rates pretty high with me. I understand there's a chance we may have you at Wainwright College for the next 7 years.
Andy's brow furrows.
7 years? Dr. Wagner, maybe you haven't looked me over thoroughly enough. Maybe your college might prefer to turn out a tall lawyer.
Well, the best goods come in small packages. You know that, Andrew.
Well, at least, Bob, now you've actually seen the boy. And I'm very grateful to you for taking the trouble.
No trouble at all, Jim. And I can honestly testify, if need be, that that boy of yours is a proper chip off the good old block.
All aboard!
Well, Jim, you make formal application for Andrew if you decide you want that scholarship.
Thank you.
Goodbye, my boy.
Goodbye, sir.
Goodbye, Jim.
Bye.
They wave to Dr. Wagner as he boards a train. Andy turns to his father.
Dad, how long did it take you to be a lawyer?
Well, it was actually 10 years before I was earning enough to keep body and soul together.
10 years? In 10 years, I'd be 28. And I'd always planned to retire by the time I was middle-aged. Now I don't know what I want to do.
Yeah, that's a serious problem. Suppose we sit down and have a good long talk after dinner.
Evening in Andy's driveway.
This is one of the big crossroads of life, Andrew. Well, goodbye, Andrew.
Andy takes the girl's outstretched hand.
Goodbye, Polly. Maybe in a few years, by some whim of fate, we'll meet again, if only for a moment.
Well, I might even be married when we meet again.
Andy briefly studies her face.
Polly, when I get married, I'll tell my little wife what a sweet little girl I used to go around with. And, well, she'll be glad because, Polly, in my adolescence, I might have gone around with a different kind of a girl. You know, the kind of a girl where there might be regrets.
And I'll tell my husband that there never was a sweeter boy than Andrew Hardy. Except him, of course.
Well, you might at least give me an even break with your husband.
Well, goodbye, Andrew.
Goodbye, Polly, and may life quickly bring to you happiness, prosperity, and a ripe old age.
He takes her hand again.
Well, goodbye, Polly. My dad is waiting for me to talk over my future. So, goodbye, and if this is goodbye forever, Polly, then goodbye forever.
Andy gazes into Polly's eyes. The brunette sits in her car, facing him. As Andy leans in, Polly cranes forward. They turn away.
But we weren't going to do this anymore.
No, I guess I'm just a creature of habit.
Polly's eyes pool with tears.
Goodbye, Andy, dear.
Goodbye, old girl.
No regrets?
No regrets. Darn it.
As Andy leaves, Polly starts to speak, then slides over to the steering wheel. Now, in the backyard, Judge Hardy sits with his son.
Well, I want to get the full richness out of my life. Question is, how?
Well, the law is a stern mistress. But every man in this country is endowed with magnificent rights and privileges. And when you come right down to it, it's in my court they get those rights.
I know, but 10 years. The next 10 years are the best years of my life.
At any age, the next 10 years are the best years in a man's life.
If I could only try the other way first before I made up my mind. Maybe, suppose I got myself a job.
Well, if you're going in for the law, I'd hate you to miss this scholarship. We have to apply inside a month.
Well, can't I use that month to find out? Couldn't I have that month? Suppose I went to New York and I got myself a job and, well, I could find out what life was all about on my own.
Andrew Hardy, you can't go off to New York all by yourself. You're hardly more than a baby.
Mrs. Hardy and Betsy lean out a window.
Betsy, you'll think that you mean that. And, well, you know that I'm 18.
Of course you are, son. But your mother just can't realize it is 18 years since you were so tiny and soft and pink. And I was washing in a basin.
Oh, Mom, you shouldn't talk like that. It isn't respectable in front of a child like Betsy.
Me, a child? Listen here, Andrew Hardy. My mother just bought me an evening dress that simply has no visible means of support.
Judge Hardy smiles.
What is this world coming to?
It's come to the day when a fine, manly young fellow wants to go out into the world and see if he can fly with his own wings. The same as his father did once. The same as my father did once. The same as your son one day will want to, Andrew.
Mrs. Hardy cradles her son's chin.
Betsy, are we going to finish those dishes or not?
As the women move away from the window, Andy turns to his father.
Hush, Dad. Isn't Mom wonderful and understanding?
Yes, Andrew, your mother's a remarkably understanding woman. By this time tomorrow, she'll think this entire scheme was her own idea.
Andy sits next to him.
And I hope you understand, too. I know you do. It isn't that my home life is beginning to pall.
Yes, I know. Well, then we'll just call it all settled, huh? I suppose you want to leave right away.
Mm-hmm.
The judge's gaze briefly drops to his lap.
My, it's a warm night. Think I'll take a little air.
He gets up, then turns back to his son, who stares off, dreamy-eyed. Morning, in the driveway, Andy and Betsy sit in the convertible.
Now, Andrew, remember to wear your rubbers when it rains and watch out crossing the streets. And positively do not speak to any strangers.
Oh, outside little Betsy here, all the people in New York will be strangers to Andy.
What do you want me to talk in New York, Mom? The deaf and dumb language?
Well, you know what I mean.
And if you're getting any tight corners, don't hesitate to telephone me immediately.
No, Dad, I'm on my own. If I get into any jams, why, I'll have to get myself out of them. I want to feel that there's nothing between me and starvation but my initiative.
And don't worry, Mrs. Hardy. My mother's going to flutter like mad when she finds out I'm coming home so soon. But I'll be there, and you can rely on me to the last drop of my blood.
Got your money in an inside pocket?
Uh-huh. I got it right here where the pickpockets can't get it.
Well, goodbye, son.
Bye, Dad.
Now remember, give it a good, fair trial. Because if you decide to become a lawyer, I want you to do it with a clear mind.
Well, I want to be sure, Dad, because the next 10 years of my life are the best. Oh, goodbye. Goodbye, Mom.
Andy kisses his mother.
Goodbye, Aunt Millie.
Goodbye, Aunt Hardy.
Goodbye,
Mrs. Hardy. Goodbye, Miss Forrest. Goodbye.
Well, goodbye, everybody. Don't worry about me. I might have gotten in a lot of complications in my life, but that was when I was just practically a kid. Now, I see everything much clearer now, and I'm never going to make any more mistakes. Bye.
Bye.
Goodbye. Goodbye. Take care of yourself.
Goodbye,
Betty. Betty, you take care of him, won't you?
Today I am a man!
As they pull away, Andy and Betsy wave. The Hardys and Aunt Millie watch as the car speeds off.
I'm mighty proud of that young man.
I wonder if he should have had some more money.
I gave him an extra $10 this morning.
I gave him $5 after lunch. I gave him $8 myself.
Oh, Mother, I thought you'd accepted this going-away business and were reconciled to it.
If being reconciled to your son going away means you can't cry, I can't see any point in being a mother.
Oh, nonsense, Emily. What is there to cry about?
The Hardys turn to Millie, who bursts into tears and runs off. The judge puts his arm around his wife.
Now, Emily, wipe your eyes, please.
I guess that's the hardest thing a mother has to do. Wipe the tears from her eyes and the years from her heart and see her little boy's a man.
Judge Hardy rubs his nose.
What are you trying to do? Make me cry, too?
My goodness, I don't know what you've got to cry about. Just think, the way young people go leaping around the country in motor cars these days. And without getting into any trouble either, James Hardy.
Now, Andy happily drives through the country with Betsy at his side.
New York. Gosh. I wonder if we're near enough to get a New York station on the radio. I need a brass band to express my feelings.
A brass band? Andy, I think New York would like to give you a big welcome, but I can't guarantee that they'll know you're coming. Listen.
To remind you, you are still listening to Station WHN, New York City.
New York.
Oh, isn't it exciting?
I don't dare get any more excited or I break out in hives.
Now, tall buildings make up the New York City skyline. The view fades to a sign that reads, City House, a residence for young men. Andy and Betsy pull up in front of the building.
A residence for young men. It sounds all right. Well, I'm going to see if my room's okay, and then I'll come out and drive you home.
Oh, no, I'm going to go in and help you unpack. You'll probably get your socks and your shirts and your pajamas all in one drawer. Men always do.
Now, Betsy enters the building's empty lobby through a revolving door. Andy follows, carrying two suitcases. They notice a sign on the wall that reads, City House does not permit women or girls above the ground floor.
This place certainly has poisonous rules.
If carried to extremes, that sort of thing could ruin a man's social life.
It has its advantages, too.
Well, under the circumstances, I think I'd better put in my first appearance without a female in tow.
I must look dangerous. I'll wait for you in the car.
As Betsy leaves, Andy turns to the front desk.
Woo!
A well-dressed manager comes out to greet him.
Have you a reservation for Mr. Andrew Hardy of Carville?
Yes, I have. Sign here, please.
Thank you.
Your room is 808. You may go right up.
Is payment in advance?
It's required.
Andy produces his wallet.
That'll be $5 for the first week in advance, right?
I'll give you a receipt.
Well, it's not necessary. The fact that I'm in my room proves that I paid for it.
That's right.
The man smiles as Andy carries his suitcases to the elevator. Andy studies the buttons for a moment, presses one, then watches the doors close. On another floor, he steps out into a hallway lined with doors. Andy looks up and down the corridor, then steps to one of the closed doors. Setting his bags down, he reaches for the knob. Four young men, three of them wearing undershirts, race from their rooms to the hallway payphone. The tallest gets there first.
This is Capital 60654. Whom do you wish to speak to, please? Mr. Hartford? No, Mr. Hartford's not in. This is Mr. Hartford's butler speaking. May I take a message? Oh, no message. Thank you very kindly, miss. No message for Buddy.
No message. She don't love him.
Hi, Tenderfoot. Drop in sometime.
Thanks.
Andy enters his room to find a boy packing.
Hello there.
Hello. Oh, I guess they told me the wrong room. Sorry.
No, I'm giving it up. I just quit my job. Why pay these people $5 for another week until I'm sure I've got more dough coming in?
You just quit your job.
Who wants to be an office boy? I got other plans. Hope you'll be happy here.
Andy follows him to the bathroom.
Say, how long ago did you quit your job?
About 15 minutes ago.
Well, where somebody quits their job, somebody else has to be hired, don't they?
Smart boy. Wish I could think like that.
Would you mind if I tried to get your old job before somebody else heard about it?
Help yourself.
Was it a good job?
I wasn't good. I don't want to be good for jobs where you have to use your head. My brains are all on my feet.
In your feet?
Sure. The only thing I want to work at is dancing.
He taps a quick step.
Well, I'll be.
Should have seen me hoofing in the Gala Cafe last year.
Yeah?
And I got sick. I had to quit dancing, go to work. Oh. All better now. Goodbye, office boy. Here comes dancing man looking for music.
The dancing boy grabs his suitcase and taps out. He presses the elevator button with his foot. Andy rushes after him.
Hey, where is that job you quit?
Consolidated Stocks and Bonds, 5 West 48th Street.
As the elevator opens, the boy dances in, pokes a button, and flips a wave goodbye as the doors close. Andy smiles and pulls his door closed. Outside, he climbs into his car.
Betsy, I practically got a job. Where's 5 West 48th Street?
Well, it's right straight ahead.
The car speeds off. Later, Andy bursts into a reception area where a woman sits at a switchboard.
Employment agency? Hello, Mabel. This is Janet Hicks at Consolidated. Listen, darling, we need a new office boy again, so send over some young nuisances in the morning. Oh, no. This one got ideas and walked out on Mr. Maddox tonight. Deliver me from young America. Well, shoot over a couple of dozen. Maybe we can sift out one with an IQ of over 6 years. Bye.
Andy doffs his hat.
We do.
Something I can do for you?
I'd like to buy some stocks and bonds.
She smiles skeptically.
That is, I'd like to see Mr. Maddox if he's the head of the firm.
Oh, Mr. Maddox has gone out to dinner. He won't be back till 7.
Oh. Well, I'll wait.
He steps aside and takes a seat. Out in the evening air, Betsy waits in the passenger seat of Andy's car. A mounted policeman stops beside her.
Miss, that's a loading zone. You can't park.
But there's no other place to park.
Well, you'll have to drive around the block till your party comes out.
All right. Far be it for me to argue with the law. My boyfriend isn't going to like this.
She scoots behind the wheel and drives off. Inside, Andy shifts in his seat. The secretary smiles over at him, then gets up from her desk.
Listen, will you hold down the switchboard for me for 5 minutes? I have a date at 7:15. I want to get fixed up.
Why, certainly, it'd be a pleasure.
Andy sits at her desk.
Only what do I do now if it starts ringing or blinking or something?
Well, all you do is plug this in over the light and open this key and take any messages.
I see. Thanks.
Thank you.
As the secretary picks up a small beauty case and disappears into a nearby room, Andy settles in at the switchboard. With hands folded, Andy eyes the desk, then starts fiddling with the switchboard.
Number, please.
Andy quickly picks up a headset.
Hmm?
Number, please.
As he disconnects, Andy smiles.
Gosh, it works. Hot dog, this job's gonna be my meat.
Outside, Betsy pulls up to the front of the building. Betsy looks over her shoulder and sees a dozen cars lined up behind her. Frantically, she puts the car in gear and pulls away. Back inside, Andy waits at the desk wearing the headset. He notices a book in front of him and opens it. The inside cover reads, "Stolen from Janet Hicks." Andy smiles and sets the book back down. Just then, the secretary comes out wearing a black dress with a plunging neckline. Andy does a double take as she checks her hair in a purse mirror. She returns to the desk.
Thanks. Any calls?
No, ma'am. I mean, no, miss. Miss Hicks?
The woman smiles at Andy. She answers the switchboard.
Consolidated Stocks and Bonds. Oh, yes, Mr. Maddox. This is Miss Hicks. Not till 8, Mr. Maddox, did you say? Right.
Won't Mr. Maddox be back until 8 o'clock?
No. I'll wait.
Andy grabs his hat off the desk and returns to the bench. Miss Hicks places a call.
Hello, Steve. This is Janet. Sorry, the boss is coming back at 8, so the party's off. Want to make it tomorrow night? Well, if that's the way you feel about it, goodbye and good luck.
Andy watches her disconnect. Now, a tall, smartly dressed woman enters.
Any word from Mr. Maddox?
8 o'clock, period. Once Chicago prices ready, period.
Life in a big city. I burn, period.
I starve.
Andy watches as the tall secretary strides past several desks. Miss Hicks places another call.
Mayfield Cutright, Consolidated, 5 West 48th. 1 3-decker club on white toast. 1 certified milk.
Andy's eyes widen.
Oh, I beg your pardon. I've got to wait for Mr. Maddox. I just wondered, could I get some dinner, too?
Hold it.
Oh, the same as you ordered.
Flatterer. Business is picking up. Double that order. And see if you've got a delivery boy with more than one leg.
Maybe I ought to introduce myself.
He steps in front of her desk.
I'm Mr. Andrew Hardy. I live in Carville, and I just came to the city.
After you tackle that drugstore sandwich, you'll go right back to the country.
Outside, Betsy backs into a parking spot. Her face relaxes, and she smiles broadly. Her gaze wanders to the curb where two suited men talk. The two part ways, revealing a white no parking sign. Betsy's head tilts back. She angrily pulls back into the street. Inside, a boy delivers the sandwiches.
Okay, here we are. That will be $1.40, please.
Hey, wait a minute. Let me see that bill. $1.30, Jesse James.
Okay, $1.30.
Well, yeah, have you got change for $10?
You mean I gotta come all the way back up here?
No, no. Leave the change at the cashier's cage. You can pick it up when you leave.
Well, they don't know me at the drugstore.
They know me. I buy everything in that drugstore except my clothes. They don't sell cloaks and suits yet.
We got a new line of ladies' hosiery, bathing suits, sports shoes, lingerie.
Okay, Mr. Wanamaker, scram.
She turns the boy around and gently pushes him out. Back outside, Andy's car lurches twice, then comes to a stop. Betsy looks down to the fuel gauge. It's empty. The mounted policeman rides up.
Young lady, the second time I find anybody in the same place, I always write them an invitation to a party.
Listen, officer, I'm out of gas.
Oh, please.
Look, look, see for yourself. Now what do I do?
Hey, buddy, push us up to that gas station.
Okay.
The car behind Betsy pushes Andy's car down the street. Inside, the clock shows a few minutes past 8. Andy closes his sandwich box as a mustached man enters the front door and approaches Miss Hicks.
Is Miss Norton here?
In your office, Mr. Maddox.
Oh, excuse me, sir, but could I see you for a few moments, please?
Well, who are you?
Oh, this is Mr. Hardy. He wants to buy some stocks and bonds.
That's not funny.
Mr. Maddox walks into his office and Andy follows.
Let me have the Chicago prices, please, Miss Norton.
As Mr. Maddox sits at his desk, the tall secretary approaches. Andy steels himself and steps toward the broker's desk.
Mr. Maddox, I've got a very important business matter to discuss with you. It's important to you, too.
Miss Norton, will you give me the Philadelphia report, please?
What is it, young man?
Well, your office boy quit tonight. And, well, you'll naturally have to have a new one, won't you?
You're not it.
Well, nobody else could have gotten ahead of me.
Somebody did. My wife's nephew.
Oh. Excuse me.
Andy exits sadly. Right. Outside the office, Miss Norton talks on the phone. As Miss Hicks brushes off the hem of her dress, she notices Andy walk by.
Oh, Mr. Hardy, did you buy your stocks and bonds?
Mr. Maddox and I couldn't find a common ground of understanding.
That's too bad. But wait just a second, and I'll show you the drugstore.
Oh, gosh, that's right. I almost forgot my change. The Greeks had a word for it, Jenny. Cradle robbing. Besides, I thought you had a date with Steve tonight.
Steve? Why? He doesn't dance. He's too fond of dark corners.
And he doesn't like walking by store windows full of big silver fox coats.
But that's a great big grown-up man. Might fall into the hands of some dangerous woman. Coming, Mr. Hardy.
As they exit the building, Andy freezes. Stunned, he walks forward.
What's the matter?
My car.
Your car? Oh, Mr. Hardy, have you a car?
Well, sure, it was right here, and now it's gone.
Find a policeman.
No, it wasn't stolen. There was somebody in it.
Your chauffeur, of course. He's probably driving around the block.
Yeah, sure, I never thought of that. In Carvaway, you can park any place.
Well, let's get your change and then find your car.
Andy nods, and they walk arm in arm down the street. Later, in the drugstore.
65, 75, 2, 3, 4, 5, and 5 is 10.
And any time my friend Mr. Hardy wants anything, see that he gets the best.
Well, thank you.
Thank you.
Miss Hicks watches Andy count his wad of bills.
8, 45, that's right. Thank you very much, miss. Shall we go?
Walking away from the cashier, Miss Hicks eyes a counter.
Oh, I just remembered I need a new toothbrush.
She picks one out as a clerk walks up.
This one, please.
45 cents, please.
Oh, I've got it.
Oh, no, no.
Let me buy your toothbrush, please.
All right, if you can afford it.
There. There's 25, 35, 45. Do you need anything else?
No.
She walks to another counter.
I don't think so.
Miss Hicks picks up a perfume bottle.
Do you like that perfume? Let me buy it for you.
Now, wait a minute.
Oh, that's only a little bottle, I know, but here's a big one.
There's no reason why you should buy me perfume.
Oh, there's more likely to be a reason if I buy you the perfume first.
She smiles coyly at him, and Andy raises his eyebrows.
How much is this?
$36.
Andy's smile wilts.
How much?
This bottle is $36. That one is $15.
This is the one that she wants here. This is it.
He takes the smaller bottle from Miss Hicks, hands it to the clerk, and pays.
Thank you. I'll wrap it.
Oh, no, I'll take it just like it is. Thank you.
Andy takes a deep breath and passes it to Miss Hicks.
There you are.
You're so sweet. I'm going to let you take me home.
Oh, where do you live?
136th Street.
Outside the store.
Back in Carville, the streets only go as high as 9th. 136th Street seems like it ought to be in the next state. But I suppose these new type of buses get you there in no time at all.
Good evening.
A cabbie.
Don't worry about your car. Your chauffeur won't leave till he picks you up. You can drop me home and the cab will bring you right back.
She hops in.
Where to, sir?
136th Street.
Now in the cab.
You know, I bet you don't believe I really do have a car, do you?
Oh, of course you have.
Gosh. It's a swell of a car. You just push a button, the top goes up and down.
I really believe you have got a car. From now on, I'll believe everything you say.
Would you believe me if I said that I've never met a girl like you before?
What do you mean, like me?
Well, you're so efficient. You saved 10 cents on that drugstore bill. All the other girls I know are kind of gaga.
Later, the cab rolls to a stop in front of a row of brownstones.
So, if I don't get started on a business career real soon, I'll end up in a little college where they don't even have co-eds.
And we couldn't have that.
Andy stares ahead with a dazed smile as Miss Hicks crawls past him. Starting to speak, Andy turns to her empty seat. He gets out.
That'll be $2.25.
You wait for me.
Andy approaches Miss Hicks. She takes his hand and leads him to her building. At her door, she searches through her purse.
Well, goodbye, Mr. Hardy. It's been nice knowing you.
Oh, I'll help you.
He reaches into her purse.
Well.
There they are.
He withdraws her keys and turns to the door.
That's my apartment key. The other's the front door.
He looks at the key and smiles to her.
Thanks.
He opens the door and returns the keys with a flourish. She looks at his smiling young face, then back to the keys in her hand. Miss Hicks smiles sensually as she moves past him to the door. Andy removes his hat.
Oh, I'm going to see you again, aren't I?
Here, this perfume. It's the wrong kind. Will you take it back for me?
No. You change it for whatever kind you'd like.
Somebody might think I promoted you to buy it for me.
No. Keep it, please. Please keep it.
You're never going to see me again, you know.
She sets the perfume in Andy's arm, then disappears into the building. Andy's confused gaze flits between the door and the perfume. Replacing his boater hat, he mopes out to the sidewalk where the cabbie waits. The cabbie opens the car door.
Where to?
Where's the nearest bus stop?
Bus stop?
Yeah.
About 6 blocks east.
The cabbie holds out a slip of paper.
225.
Yeah.
1, 2, 3. Keep the change.
Well, thanks, Mr. Rockefeller.
Andy starts off down the sidewalk, and Betsy pulls up in his car.
Well, Betsy, what are you doing here?
I didn't know what was going on, so I followed you. Get in.
Betsy slides to the passenger side.
You drive.
Andy climbs into the driver's seat.
I don't want to complain, but I drove around that revolting block 51 times, and my feet are killing me.
Well, that young woman.
What young woman?
The one I had with me in the taxi cab.
I didn't see any young woman with you in the taxi cab.
Gosh, can't a guy make a business acquaintance and take her home without everybody getting in an uproar?
Well, why didn't you drive her home in your own car?
Because you weren't there.
You mean because I was there?
Well, I didn't want to make her drive home in a car with a child.
Child? Oh, so the conversation was too gruesome for a child
to
hear.
No such thing.
Well, then why did you bring up the subject?
I didn't bring it up. You did.
I brought up the subject about my being a child.
Yeah.
Now, Andy's car pulls up to a large brick apartment building.
You're home, I believe.
He pushes open her door.
Thank you.
She gets out and slams it.
Betsy. I'm sorry. I guess I got a little upset.
Yeah, I could upset people, too, if I wore the kind of clothes she wears.
Yeah, sure you could.
I could?
She smiles.
Andy, do you think I'm deadly?
Why, you'll be a riot. 5 or 6 years.
The corners of her mouth droop.
I've got a present for you. Here.
Present? For me? Really? Perfume. Andy, you mean you actually bought this super terrific perfume for me?
Who else would I buy it for?
Let's rise above that. No, I want to think you bought it for me. And if a female only thinks what she ought to think, she won't get into any trouble. Come on in, Andy. It's late and you haven't had any dinner.
No, thanks. I got to get to bed early and get up in the morning and feel fresh and go look for a job.
Yeah, and you'll get a job. I know you will. And will you call me if you have anything to report? And whether you have anything to report or whether you haven't got anything to report, will you call me anyway?
Yes. Good night, Betsy.
Good night. Oh, and you're not going to have any more business dealings with that certain young woman, are you?
No, I guess not. She's an awful funny person.
You know, there for a while, I thought she really did promote me for that perfume. Good night, Betsy.
As Andy pulls away, Betsy gapes after him, then scowls. She smashes the perfume bottle on the sidewalk and runs into her building. Now, a sign over a buzzer. We ring once for morning alarm or other requested call. Ring twice to indicate visitor in lobby. You ring once to acknowledge call. Ring twice to indicate your desire to see visitors. We both ring five times for fire or other disaster. City House. A travel clock on Andy's bedside table shows 8 o'clock. Yawning, Andy wakes and shields his eyes from the early morning sunlight. Andy slowly rises, his hair tousled. He throws off the sheet and staggers to the door in his long-sleeved pajamas. Scratching his head, Andy opens the door and picks up a newspaper from the hall. Still groggy, he removes the newspaper's rubber band and unfolds its pages. Now, in the Hardy kitchen, Mrs. Hardy flips bacon as the judge enters.
Oh, good morning, Emily.
Good morning, James. Now, don't annoy me. Go and sit down at the dining room table, and I'll have your fruit juice there in a jiffy.
No. I'm going to have breakfast out here in the kitchen. It's cozier.
Well, if you insist. I might as well save myself a few steps with Marion away and Millie on vacation and no loud, noisy nuisance of an Andrew around.
Why, this is like when we were first married. Just we two. Breakfast in the kitchen.
Yes, only then we didn't have any family to miss. Let's see, how long has Andy been gone now?
Just 12 hours longer than the last time you asked me. A total of 13 days, 19 hours, and 22 minutes.
A smiling milkman enters through the open back door.
Milk?
One quart will do.
Only one quart this morning, Mrs. Hardy?
Yes, we don't use so much milk with Andy away.
Well, what do you hear from Andy? Has he got a job yet?
Yes, we just got a letter from him.
Mother, did you take that letter to bed with you?
I know it by heart. He says, I've just started work with Consolidated Stocks and Bonds. Just imagine our Andy handling stocks and bonds. James, you don't suppose Andy's handling anything too heavy for him to lift, do you?
No, probably some light brain work, like making figures on a blackboard.
Now, stock figures and quotes cover a wall-sized blackboard. Andy waits nearby as a janitor sweeps the office.
There's Miss Hicks now.
Good morning, Charlie.
Good morning, Miss.
Miss Hicks.
Well, what can I do for you at the crack of dawn, Mr. Hardy?
Well, if I should get a call here, anybody should think I might be working here. Would you not tell them any different?
Somebody might have jumped to the wrong conclusion.
Yeah. And if a letter should come for me.
Where are you living?
City House.
Oh, I just remembered. I didn't pay you for that taxi, did I?
No, don't, please. That was a privilege.
Well, I guess I can take care of any phone calls or mail.
Not that there's likely to be any. It's just a precaution. Thanks terribly.
Oh, that's all right.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Miss Norton enters.
Hello, Jeanette.
Following Miss Hicks' gaze, she turns to see the weary young man. Andy notices their glances, puts on his hat, and spryly exits the building.
Well, I see you haven't got his shirt yet, but you certainly have him looking shabby.
Not me, honey.
What's the matter? Couldn't he dig up the silver fox? Or have you reformed?
Why should I reform? Men always appreciate a girl more when they have to spend money on her. But that kid, did you notice his shoes?
Now, our view follows Andy's shoes. He opens a glass door marked Barnes Dollar Employment Agency and later steps on a doormat that reads Personnel Department. Later still, his shoes stop before a chalkboard of job postings. Now, he climbs a staircase. Each step has a phrase on it. Walk up, a flight, in day or night, we'll get you a job or there's none in sight. Evening. Andy scuffed shoes plod to a park bench. Andy takes a seat, then lifts the pant legs of his disheveled suit. He bends over to tie his shoe, and a peanut lands near his feet. As Andy looks up, a squirrel wanders over and nibbles on it.
That's a pretty puss. Go on and eat till you're silly.
Hiya, Betsy.
Now, who'd ever expect to find you here?
I guess you would.
I say I would. Been waiting here since 5 o'clock.
For what?
For what? Listen, when a girl calls a man 14 times in 10 days and either they tell her that he isn't in or else some loathsome creature answers the phone and says, this is Mr. Andrew Hardy's valet. Mr. Hardy is entertaining at dinner tonight and cannot be disturbed. What goes on at that city house anyway? And when a girl will sit in the reception room for hours, not once, but four times, on a chair that's made out of marble and gas pipe, and they keep telling her that he isn't in or else he's taking a bath. Well, any goon would want to find out why she's getting such a brush off.
Well, I phoned you twice after I gave you the perfume, didn't I? You were...
I know. I wouldn't talk to you. I was mad. I got over it quick, though.
Andy looks away from her smile.
And, then I've been kind of busy, too. It's taken me a little while to find a job.
Job? Andy, you haven't got a job. Now, don't try to be big with me. I know that most fellas have to put on a smooth front for girls because they're supposed to be the superior sex, but I'm not that kind of a dope, Andy.
All right. So I haven't got a job. But every time I lose out, somebody gets a job, and it's going to be my turn any minute.
But look at yourself. Look at your clothes are dreadful. You got a button off your shirt. You just look down and out.
I am not.
Brother, if you're not the forgotten man, you're certainly not being remembered very well. Look at your shoes. Look.
Well, that's these New York sidewalks. You walk a lot.
Walk? What's happened to that super weighty car?
It's in storage. Dead storage. Costs $30 a month in advance just for a garage. Gosh, I never realized before how much it costs to live.
Grim enough just having to pay room and board in New York.
But it's the little things that cost that you never realized before. Your laundry, your soap, your toothpaste, a million little things. 25 cents here, 20 cents there, maybe only a dime. That's the trouble with life, Betsy. It dimes you to death.
You look hungry.
I am not hungry.
She sneaks a peanut bag into his pocket.
Oh, then you're not getting enough vitamins. Listen, Andy, why don't you let me help you? My dad gives me a fantastic allowance.
Nothing doing. When I left Carville, you heard me say today I am a man, didn't you? So I've got to work out my own destiny. Or else I'll have to go back with my tail between my legs and say I'm not a man. I'm only just a little boy. I can't make the great unless somebody helps me. Oh, no, no. Oh, I'll be a lot hungrier than I am now before I'll ever do that.
I thought you said you weren't hungry.
Well, everybody's hungry before they eat dinner, aren't they?
Got any money for dinner?
Certainly I have money.
How much?
I've got $5.65. Now, does that satisfy you?
Most certainly does not. But it's better than I was afraid of. What's going to become of you after that's spent?
What becomes of other kids?
Don't talk like that.
Oh, nothing serious is going to happen to me. I've got a home to go back to. Oh, I admit I was only practically a kid when I first came to New York, but now I see everything much clearer. And I'm never going to make the same mistakes again. So don't you worry your pretty little head about me. You're only a kid, and you're much too young to concern yourself about life.
Boy, I'm getting older every moment, too.
Well, it's getting time for dinner, and I'm kind of tired, so I'll see you later, Betsy. Bye.
Bye, Andy.
With a quick wave, Betsy watches Andy walk away into the park. He stops next to a gazebo and looks back toward Betsy, who lets out a deep breath. Her concerned gaze shows through her hat's fishnet veil. As she gets up from the bench and leaves, Andy rests his hands in his pockets and finds the bag of peanuts that Betsy hid there. Andy looks back toward Betsy as he opens the bag. On the gazebo's bench, a young man stirs from sleeping. It's the dancing boy from City House. He spots Andy and smiles.
Hiya!
He remembers me. My face, perhaps. My divine figure. My nimble-footed agility. You're not a man. You're a genie. I rubbed Aladdin's lamp and the genie is here.
Oh, yeah, Aladdin, how are you?
Wonderful, genie, wonderful. The genie brings gold. Nuggets of gold as I wished for when I rubbed the lamp. I will have a nugget, genie. I'll have two nuggets.
He takes some peanuts.
Where are you staying now?
You're at my palace gate. Come in.
They step into the gazebo.
Careful. Don't bump against this statue. It cost millions. You're safer in the bedroom. Sit down.
Thank you.
Care not for this priceless damask cover.
Hey, you don't really sleep here, do you?
Not very well, Jeannie, but here.
The boy frantically munches peanuts.
That's terrible. Look,
Why don't you come on over to my place? We'll get some dinner, and you can stay all night with me.
Beware, Jeannie. They don't allow that in the city house. When they see us thou enter their portals with thy humble servant, they will toss thy servant out on his proboscis.
He grabbed more peanuts.
No, not if they don't see you. Look, I'll divert Mr. Jackson's attention. You can sneak into the elevator, huh?
The boy gives a short laugh, then grows somber.
Okay, kid. Let's try it. I'm kind of dead.
The boy's defeated gaze drops to his lap. Andy grabs the boy's hat and places it on his head. Now, Andy enters City House.
Well, well, well. Good evening, Mr. Jackson. Is there any mail for me?
No, no mail, but your week starts today. That will be $5, please.
Oh, the week starts today, does it?
And 40 cents. Says laundry here. There must be some mistake. 40 cents can't be right for a week's laundry.
As Mr. Jackson turns to the mailboxes, Andy waves the dancing boy in, who crawls monkey-like into the elevator.
Yes, that seems to be right. 5:40.
Yeah, I guess it's right. I didn't send out so much laundry this week. My mother made me bring so many clean clothes. 5:40?
Yeah.
There you go.
All right, thank you.
Thank you.
Upstairs, the two rush into Andy's dark room. Andy shuts the door and turns on the light.
You sure diverted him.
Yeah, he kind of diverted me. Well, Jimmy, the room's paid up for another week. I've got 25 cents left. You're welcome to half of it if you want it.
Well, I'm not going to say no, kid. I don't have any more no's left than me. 25 cents. A fortune, Jeannie. We can eat for 3 days.
Now, at the Hardys, the judge sits on the porch fanning himself. Mrs. Hardy joins him.
Kind of quiet around the house, isn't it?
Oh, Emily, must you always be reminding me that Andrew's away?
Me remind you?
Why, James Hardy, 5 minutes ago I asked you what you wanted for Sunday dinner, and you said Andrew, medium rare with mashed potatoes.
The judge stops fanning himself and looks up to his smiling wife.
All right, Mother. All right. So it's quiet here.
As he pats her arm, they both lose their smiles. Mrs. Hardy's lip trembles, and she heads back inside. The judge stirs from a thoughtful stare, then rushes inside. He answers the phone.
Hello. Oh, hello.
He turns to Mrs. Hardy.
A business call. George Benedict. Yes, yes, this is Judge Hardy, George.
George?
It's Betsy.
Wait a minute, let's get organized. Oh, I see, you're sending up a flare, right? Well, Judge, just don't brood about Andy. He's simply swell. Of course, he hasn't got a job, but then he can't worry about getting fired, can he? Of course, his car's in hock, but then he can't waste money on gasoline, which is perfectly swell because he hasn't got much money left. But then he can't worry about pickpockets, can he? And in case he asks you, remember, I told you, everything's adequate, simply adequate.
I'll look into the situation immediately, George.
You will? Oh, Judge Hardy, you're the essence of peppermint.
I'm what?
Oh, that's sub-deb talk. That means you're smooth, priceless, divine, marvelous, cute, quaint, luscious, and super.
Thank you, my dear.
Mrs. Hardy raises her eyebrows.
My dear, aren't you getting a bit familiar with George Benedict?
Slip the tongue. I've got to go to New York Friday. Legal business. So if you're writing to Andy tonight, don't mention it. I may not have time to see him.
Oh, I wouldn't mention it for the world.
She rushes off. Her husband looks after her with a frown. Now, in New York, the dancing boy lies in his skivvies on Andy's bed. Andy enters and shakes his head. Letting out a deep breath, Andy removes his hat and stretches his back. As he takes off his jacket, he notices his high school pin.
Did you ever go to high school, Jim?
No. I ran away from school and joined a traveling carnival troupe.
Carville High School. Class of 1941. Yeah, there's a present for you.
He tosses it to Jimmy.
Hey, isn't this valuable?
The pawnbroker wouldn't even give me a quarter for it.
What'd you study in high school?
Practically everything.
It's very comical. I only want to dance, and I can't get a job dancing. You want to do everything, and you can't get a job doing anything.
Well, that isn't because you didn't go to school. It isn't because I did. For instance, there was a girl in my class, Catherine Land. She studied to be a stenographer. She got a nice job, and her brother studied art, and he got a job in the department store. Gosh, they studied for a special job. I never thought about that before. I guess that's why you can take so many things in high school.
I want me a special job.
What kind of a job could I be of real use in?
That's the third time today. I'll give a
no,
push.
No, don't do it. I don't want to talk to her.
Same girl?
Yeah.
Not the right one, huh?
No, Betsy's only a kid. You know, Jimmy, it's harder to fool a kid than it is an adult. Our folks are rich and she, you know.
Wish I had a girl that'd wait all day trying to lend me money.
Jimmy rests his head on his hand. Andy's eyes shift.
You know, I don't think I'm going to be able to take this much longer. The going's too tough. I'm going to let Betsy lend me some money and...
Not for me, you won't.
For me. What I need is a good solid meal under my belt, and then I can go ahead with my new scheme. For instance, I know a lot about automobiles. Guys, I used to have an old jalopy that my dad couldn't go two blocks in. But I used to run my grill all over the country in it. Yeah, that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to go around to these big garages and try to get a job as a grease monkey. Because when it comes to cars, I do know what I'm talking about, Jim.
Andy races into the hallway along with three other boys. He gets to the phone first.
Capital 60654. Who did you wish to speak to, please? Mr. Hardy?
The other guys leave.
This is Mr. Hardy's secretary speaking. I'll call him just a moment, please. Hello? This is Mr. Hardy speaking. Yes? Yes, sir? I'll give him the message. Yes, sir. Goodbye.
As Andy rushes toward his room, grinning, the boy next door glares. Andy goes inside.
Jimmy, that was the Coronet Cafe. They want you to be over there at 7 p.m. tonight for a tryout.
Hooray! That joint promised and they came through. Andy, it brought me luck.
Oh, boy, now we don't have to borrow any money from Betsy. Our luck has changed. Well, I'll go down right now and get rid of that infant.
As Andy leaves, Jimmy practices. Downstairs, a magazine hides a girl's face.
Betsy.
She lowers the magazine.
Hello.
Well, Miss Hicks.
Here's the letter that came for you.
Hmm? Oh, thanks. It's from my mother, excuse me.
Andy tears open his letter. As he reads to himself, his expression droops. Miss Hicks studies his face and frowns.
No bad news, I trust.
No, my father's coming to New York Saturday.
Won't he be pleased to find you've a job?
But I haven't got a job, Miss Hicks.
Oh, yes, you have. Mr. Maddox's wife's nephew told Mr. Maddox that he was going to take 2 hours for lunch. So Mr. Maddox told him he could take 2 years.
You mean that I can apply for the job before anybody else?
You've got the job. Mr. Maddox was so mad that when I told him of a bright young man who could come to work right away, he yelled, "Where is he?" And here you are.
Oh, you wouldn't fool me, would you, Miss Hicks?
No, I wouldn't fool you.
Oh, but maybe I don't know enough for the job. Well, what does an office boy have to know?
Practically everything.
Andy grins.
That's me. Come on.
Now, at Consolidated Stocks and Bonds.
Well, my lad, that's all there is to being an office boy. Remember now, when this buzzer rings 3 times, Mr. Maddox wants you, and don't loiter.
Right, the buzzer rings 3 times, and zoom, I'm in Mr. Maddox's office like that.
And don't forget this push-button lock. His door won't open from the outside unless I push this clicker.
Right. Remember, click.
And Mr. Maddox goes crazy when he sees his employees doing nothing. It's the hardest thing we do, playing busy. When he pops out, you get busy.
Doing what?
Well, pretend to do anything. Sharpen the pencils, get the carbon paper, fill the flower vases.
My legs feel kind of funny. My stomach feels kind of funny, too.
Didn't you have any lunch?
Sure, I had lunch. I had lunch yesterday.
Andy gulps and spots something across the room. He walks over and straightens a painting on the wall by Mr. Maddox's door. As he adjusts it with shaky hands, a waiter with a tray exits Mr. Maddox's office. Andy eyes the breakfast dishes, then spots a water cooler nearby. Andy repeatedly glances toward the dishes as he goes to the cooler and fills a small cup for himself. Taking a sip, he spots a billboard outside the window. On it, a black chef holds a knife to a giant plate of ham. Words read, Colt's Golden Ham. Andy gapes, then guzzles his water. Andy bolts to Maddox's door. Straightening his jacket, Andy waits with his hand above the doorknob. He watches disappointedly as a secretary enters the office through a second door. With a sigh, Andy steps back to the water cooler and fills a second cup. He takes it to the secretary's desk and starts to pour the water into a slender bud vase. As Miss Norton suddenly exits Maddox's office, Andy clumsily dumps the water onto the desk. Turning his attention back to the vase, he notices the puddle on the desk and takes out a handkerchief. He nervously mops up the water, then wrings out the handkerchief onto the floor.
Boy.
Yes, ma'am.
Get these letters out, please.
Yes, ma'am.
Andy wrings the handkerchief once more, then anxiously puts it in his pocket. He scoops the basket of letters up and rushes them to his desk. Miss Hicks smiles at him as he speedily folds a letter.
Relax.
She looks to Miss Norton.
His name's Andrew.
Would you have a piece of candy, Andrew?
You betcha.
He races to her desk, takes a chocolate from a box, and puts the whole thing in his mouth.
But don't let Mr. Maddox see you eating it.
Oh, no. Thanks.
Miss Hicks grins as Andy happily returns to his desk.
Consolidated Stocks and Bonds. Just a moment, please.
At his desk, Andy quickly stuffs envelopes. As he swallows his candy, he stops working and his eyes bug out. He queasily smacks his lips together and stares off blankly. Miss Hicks levels a concerned gaze on him.
You look a little green around the gills. Are you feeling all right?
Oh, I'm not sure. Just a little warm and the excitement of having a new job.
Miss Hicks turns on a fan beside her desk, and it blows toward Andy. As she turns back to the switchboard, Andy smiles thankfully at her. He lets out a long, slow breath. Getting to his feet unsteadily, he knocks an envelope onto the floor. Andy heads back toward the water cooler and pours himself another cup. As he sips groggily, he looks through the window at the giant ham billboard. His mouth hangs agape, and he leans heavily against the cooler, causing large air bubbles to rise up through the water. Andy looks down and clutches his stomach. As Mr. Maddox exits his office, Andy races across the room. In his mad dash, he spins the secretary away from her desk, cuts in front of Mr. Maddox, and plops down in his chair. Mr. Maddox stares down at Andy, who hurriedly stuffs the envelopes. Andy smiles politely at his boss, and Mr. Maddox shakes his head. Later, a clock reads 4:55. At his desk, Andy wearily puts a letter in an envelope. As he picks up the last letter from his desk, he reaches for its corresponding envelope. It's not there. Andy searches his desk, then finds the envelope on the floor. He folds up the letter, stuffs the envelope, and puts it in a pile with the others. Andy jumps to his feet. Miss Norton enters Mr. Maddox's office. Andy slumps back into his chair.
Andrew, carbon paper, please.
Yes, ma'am.
Andy staggers to a supply room. Inside, shelves are neatly stacked with paper and boxes. As Andy pulls out a pad of carbon paper, several other pads fall to the floor. He hands the paper to a secretary.
Thank you. Would you like another piece of candy?
No, thank you.
Grimacing, Andy heads back to his desk.
Andy, the supply room.
Oh, gosh, I forgot.
He hurries back to the supply room and picks up the pads of carbon paper. As he sets them neatly on the shelf, he notices that his palms are covered with black pigment. Andy carefully pulls out a handkerchief and wipes off his hands. As he starts out of the supply room, he falters against the door and blinks heavily. Leaning on the door, he wipes his face with the dirty handkerchief and smears black pigment all over one side. And Andy bolts to the door, ricochets off of it, and slides across the floor.
Oh, Andrew!
As Andy gets to his feet and straightens his jacket, the secretaries giggle. In Mr. Maddox's office, Miss Norton stands at the broker's desk, handing the man papers. Andy approaches. Mr. Maddox looks up. His eyes widen at the sight of the wobbling, dirty-faced boy. Andy wobbles. Andy's knees buckle and he falls to the floor.
Andrew!
Miss Norton kneels down to him. Later, in a restaurant, Andy sits with Miss Hicks and takes a bite of pie.
I think you could go another piece of pie a la mode.
Uh-uh. I'll bust. I've been eating steady for the past hour and a half. You don't guess I was kind of hungry, huh?
You were starved. That's why you fainted.
No, I just got scared and my legs gave way on me, that's all.
Andy's gaze darts across the room and his brow furrows.
Say, isn't this kind of an expensive place you brought me to?
You're not worrying because you haven't the money to pay the check, are you?
He casts his gaze downward.
Andy, I'm going to pay the check. I still owe you for that taxi fare, remember? Now, don't be embarrassed, please.
Andy grins bashfully.
I'm not embarrassed. Not really. You know, you're so different that everything seems different. Gosh, I never realized before that a fella and a girl could be so frank and open about things.
You're cute. Cigarette?
No, thanks.
Old-fashioned principles?
Certainly not. I just don't want to stunt my growth, that's all. Oh, I feel swell now.
The spirit seems strong. How are the legs?
Oh, they're fine. I'll show you.
He does a hop.
Come on, let's dance.
Oh, no, you'll collapse.
Not a chance. Let's have fun. Celebrate my job. Isn't this my night to howl? Come on.
He grabs her hand.
Oh, but Andy, I can't conga.
You can't? Oh, my, what have you been dating around with a bunch of stuffed shirts?
A little stuffed or a little elderly.
Come on, be your age. Be our age. You know, it's just as bad to be too old for your years as it is to be mentally backward. Why, you're not an old hag. Get savage. Let yourself go. Come on.
He pulls her from the table to the dance floor, where a dozen people move in a conga line. Andy joins the end, placing his hands on the hips of the girl in front of him. Miss Hicks follows, putting her hands on Andy's hips. As the line moves forward, the dancers shimmy their hips from side to side and kick out their feet in alternation. Now, Andy and Miss Hicks break from the line and hold hands as they conga next to one another.
That's the stuff. What you need is a little more wiggle-waggle and some rubber in your legs. Oh, that's it.
She wiggles her hips. Later, Andy and Miss Hicks stride down the sidewalk holding hands. They enter her apartment building, and Miss Hicks holds her keys out for Andy. With a confident smile, Andy takes her keys and opens the front door. Now, taking off his boater hat, Andy turns to Miss Hicks and starts to speak. She stares at him with dewy eyes, and he hesitates.
You're trying to decide whether or not to kiss me, aren't you?
Yeah.
She steps closer to Andy and looks him in the eye.
What's your decision?
Oh, I can't.
You don't like me that much?
Oh, Jenny, that isn't it at all. I am crazy about you. Only...
Only what, Andy?
Well, a fella can't kiss a girl goodnight after she's paid for the dinner.
Of course he can't.
Miss Hicks steps in close, takes Andy's chin in her hand, and kisses him gently on the lips. As she backs away, Andy gapes. Miss Hicks sidles past him to the door.
Could I have a date with you Saturday night?
To do what?
To have fun and dance and be our age.
Oh, why Saturday night? No work the morning after?
Yes. Besides, that's my first payday.
Saturday night.
As she heads inside, Andy stares after her. The corner of his mouth rises in an exhilarated smile. He happily puts on his boater, taps it snug, and leaves. Later, he enters City House and does an energetic tap dance over to the elevator. A night watchman sits beside it.
Good evening, Mr. Hood. Mr. Hardy.
Yes?
Mr. Jackson found out young Frobisher's been sleeping in your room.
He did? Oh, well, what'd he do? Where's Jimmy Frobisher and where's Mr. Jackson?
Mr. Jackson's in bed. But young Frobisher's still upstairs, only he's got to get out early in the morning.
I'll fix it up with Mr. Jackson in the morning because I've got a job now and everything's going to be fine.
Upstairs, Andy hurries into his darkened room.
Jimmy, are you here?
Andy flips on the lights and finds the room empty.
Jimmy!
He enters the bathroom and gapes.
Jimmy.
Andy kneels down to the floor and places his hand on Jimmy's chest. Frowning, Andy takes Jimmy's hand in his. As he looks down at it, the limp hand slips from his grasp. Andy gulps and slowly gets to his feet, his eyes still fixed on his friend's body. He backs away from the bathroom and rushes to the buzzer. He presses it 5 times, then races out the door. Downstairs, Mr. Hood stands by the elevator.
Mr. Jackson! Mr. Jackson!
Andy comes out of the elevator.
What is it, fire?
It's Jimmy Frobisher. He's...
What's the matter, Hardy? What is it?
Jimmy Frobisher. He's killed himself in my bathroom.
What?
Jimmy, he's dead.
As Mr. Jackson and the night watchman head upstairs, Andy gloomily steps over to the counter and rests his arms and head on it. Later, outside, a policeman enters City House. Betsy stands with Andy.
Don't talk about it anymore, Andy. Please.
It helps to talk about it.
Oh, then talk about it. Would it help if you sort of cried a little bit?
No, I don't want to cry.
I'm not so sure if I can cope with this or not. I might cry a little bit myself.
Why shouldn't you cry? Somebody's dead. It just doesn't seem right unless somebody cries. Oh, I hardly know him, I tell you. Come on, Betsy, let's walk or something. It's better than wait.
All right. We walk.
Mr. Jackson.
Mr. Hardy, please listen to Dr. Storton carefully.
Your young friend did not commit suicide. He had a bad heart. A leaky mitral valve gave way on him. A sudden strain, perhaps. What kind of work did he do?
Well, he auditioned this afternoon. He was a dancer. He told me that last year he was sick. That he had to stop work.
That's the answer. He overdid it. I thought you'd feel better if you knew the truth.
Thank you, sir.
Mr. Jackson turns to Andy.
I've talked with the chairman of City House Committee. I suppose you will want to handle the funeral arrangements.
Funeral? Me? Yes, sure. I was Jimmy's closest friend. I'd be glad to make all the arrangements.
Can you meet me here at 9 a.m?
Yes, sure.
Andy looks off despondently as Mr. Jackson leaves.
9 a.m. Oh, I forgot. I've got to be at work at 9.
Andy, have you really got a job, or are you still trying to be big with me?
Yes, Betsy, I've really got a job, and I'm never going to try to be big with anybody again as long as I live.
Now, at Consolidated Stocks and Bonds, Betsy waits in a chair beside the door. As Miss Norton enters, Betsy stands.
Excuse me. Are you Miss Hicks?
No, but may I help you?
Well, no, thank you. I've got to see Miss Hicks.
Well, she ought to be around any minute now, if you care to wait.
Thank you.
Betsy returns to her seat. Now, Miss Hicks enters, wearing a fur coat draped over her shoulders. Taking no notice of Betsy, she struts over to Miss Norton.
Wow!
You like it?
Like it? I'm green-eyed over it. Steve?
Ho-ho. You can't get a fox skin from a skunk, can you? I just used an old charge account to take advantage of the summer sale.
I bet it wasn't the only sale you took advantage of.
Now, wait a minute.
Oh, someone to see you.
Miss Hicks approaches Betsy.
Did you want to see me?
Oh, you're you, aren't you?
I don't understand.
I mean, are you Miss Hicks?
Yes.
Oh. Well, I'm a friend of Andrew Hardy's, and he sent me down here to tell you that he'd be late for work. A friend of his died last night.
Oh, I'm sorry. Is there anything I can do?
No, thanks, just the same.
Betsy eyes the fox coat.
Are you sure there's nothing I can do to help Andrew?
No, there's nothing you can do to help Andrew. Excuse me for staring. Maybe I'm rude, but I just had to admire your tasty foxes.
Thanks. I rather admire it myself.
May I?
Yes.
Betsy holds the fur.
And about Andrew, I'll fix it. Tell him not to worry.
Oh, thank you. Goodbye.
Bye.
Betsy hands back the coat and leaves. Later, she paces along the steps by a church's tall wood doors. On the nearby curb, a chauffeur waits by a car. As Andy somberly exits the church, Betsy steps over to him.
Andy?
I could only think of how always before. Well, Jimmy never was very quiet, but he was always moving around or dancing or... To see him there so quiet.
Oh, I wish I could say something that make you feel better.
Thanks for the sympathy, Betsy.
I think sympathy should be sort of practical, too, and I think you're paying for this funeral. Won't you let me help you?
No, thanks. You're a swell girl, Betsy, but I've already arranged for the money. Well, I better go home and change my clothes. I don't want to be late to the office.
No, you mustn't be late. You know, punctuality's a very important thing. I mean, punctuality's a very good habit to acquire. Like when you go to college. It's very important that you're never late, even to an education.
Andy nods. The chauffeur holds open the car door for them as they get inside. Now, at the office, Andy brushes off his desk with a feather duster. Miss Norton enters.
Good morning, Andrew.
Good morning, Miss Norton.
Andy sits at the switchboard and answers the phone.
Good morning, Consolidated. Yes, Mr. Maddox, just a moment, please. Miss Norton, Mr. Maddox would like to speak to you on the phone.
Good morning, Mr. Maddox.
Miss Norton, who sent out the mail on Tuesday?
On Tuesday, Mr. Maddox?
Andy listens.
Why, that was Andrew Hardy, I believe. Yes, the new boy.
Then tell that butterfingered brat one of our best customers received a letter reading, Dear Martha, I don't care whether my favorite nephew wants to join the country club or not.
Andy grimaces.
Very well, Mr. Maddox.
Miss Norton hangs up. Andy pulls the plug from the switchboard and approaches her.
Sorry, Andrew.
You think he'll fire me?
Well, he isn't coming in till noon. He may calm down by then. Buck up, kid.
Andy bows his head. As he despondently sits at his desk, Miss Hicks breezes in wearing a summery dress and hat.
Good morning.
She notices Andy's glum face and approaches him.
What's wrong, Andy?
Mr. Maddox is going to fire me. I mixed up some letters.
Well, don't you worry. I'll tell him I did it. He won't fire me.
No, that wouldn't be right.
Cheer up. This is Saturday. Remember?
She smiles.
Well, I'm not so sure I'm going to have such a swell time tonight.
Wait and see. What do you say we get to work?
She grabs a stack of mail off her desk and hands it to Andy.
Thank you.
Andy starts to sort the envelopes into piles, then stops at one addressed to him. The return address reads, Merchants Auto Loan Company. Andy hurriedly rips open the envelope. Attached to the letter inside is a check. It's made out to Andrew Hardy for the sum of $100. A note in the corner of the check reads, Loan on Coronet. Andy sets down the check and takes out a piece of paper. He dips a pen into an inkwell and starts a letter. Dear Father Gallagher. Later, the office clock reads 11:55. Andy stares anxiously at Mr. Maddox's closed door. Turning his gaze from the door, he dips a stamp into a cup of water, then places it on a letter. Andy gulps and slowly gets to his feet. Miss Hicks and the other secretaries watch anxiously as Andy walks to Mr. Maddox's door. Reaching for the knob, he turns back to Miss Hicks, who gives him a worried gaze, then presses the door release button. Andy enters the office hesitantly and slowly closes the door behind him. With cautious steps, the young man approaches Mr. Maddox.
Hardy, there's one thing I can't tolerate.
Mr. Maddox, I made a mistake, and I'm sorry I made a mistake, but I made a mistake. Oh, will you hurry up and fire me quick, please? I've been waiting outside for the past 3 hours to be fired, and I just can't stand it any longer.
Mr. Maddox smiles.
Sit down, son. Go on, sit down.
Andy takes a seat.
Son, I never fired anyone for making a mistake. Only because they were going to continue making mistakes. Now, if you'd given me one alibi, it was all somebody else's fault, or you didn't really make a mistake, you'd be out on the sidewalk.
Then you're not going to fire me?
No. Not until you forget this mistake.
Oh, I'll never forget. I'll never make another mistake as long as I live.
Well, that's an ambition anyway. You got a dinner jacket?
Have I got a what?
Well, when I was your age, we used to call them tuxedos.
Oh, yes, sir. I've got a dinner jacket.
Well, here's a couple of tickets to a charity ball at the Sherry Plaza tonight. Have you got a girl?
Yes, sir. I've got a girl, and I've got a date with her tonight, too.
Then get back to work.
He gives him the tickets.
Oh, thank you, sir.
Go on, beat it.
Andy rushes out of the office with a wide grin. As he exits, the secretaries stare at him. He hustles over to Miss Hicks.
Jenny, I wasn't fired at all. Mr. Maddox is the most wonderful man in the world. He gave me two tickets, look.
Now, you see? Oh, there's a gentleman here to see you.
Judge Hardy smiles.
Why, hello, Dad.
Well, hello, son.
Hello.
I'm not interfering with business routine, am I?
Why, certainly not. I'm glad to see you.
Does this establishment allow its young executives to go out to lunch?
Why, you bet it's practically lunchtime now. I can go any time between 12 and 12:30.
Have lunch with me.
You bet I will. Wait till I get my hat.
Andy heads to the supply room. As he grabs his hat, Miss Hicks gives him a wink. Judge Hardy notices, and his concerned eyes drift downward. Smiling, Andy joins his father and they head out. Later in the drugstore, they sit at a table and look at menus.
Well, I've often snatched a sandwich at the Carville drugstore soda fountain, but this is a little overwhelming. Well, Andrew, how is everything?
Oh, everything's fine.
Looks like a first-rate place you work in.
Oh, swell place, swell people, swell boss.
Looks like you've got life by the tail.
Well, I've had a couple of experiences, but I'm all right now.
Nothing to warrant talking about, eh?
No, nothing to talk about.
Oh, have you seen Betsy?
Yes, I've seen Betsy, and she's been a great help to me, spiritually.
Yes, she's a fine girl, spiritually.
Swell girl.
You ever miss Polly Benedict?
No. Not exactly.
That's a pretty little girl at the phone desk in your office.
Yes, and she's got a lot of character, too. She earns her own living, and she hasn't any family at all.
I see.
What do you have, gentlemen?
Well, what do you have, Dad?
Well, I'm fascinated at the thought of eating a triple-decker 48th Street special sandwich. And just a cup of ordinary coffee.
Make mine the same.
All right.
Well, Andy, your experimental month is over. Has college and scholarship lost out?
Dad, I honestly don't know.
Why not come home tomorrow, Sunday? We can thrash the whole thing out. Then if you decide against college, why, you can go back to your job. Traveling at my expense, of course.
Dad, if you don't mind, I just don't care to talk it over now.
Well, then let's just leave it this way. If you want to go to college, you come home. And if you want your job, well, your mother and I can expect you when it's convenient to you and you want to see us.
Dad, you're acting very funny.
Funny?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I thought I was acting particularly intelligent. You know, Andrew, you've taken on some of the aspects of manhood. You're away from home, you're earning your living. That's being a man. And as a man, so I must treat you.
I appreciate that too, Dad. But I'll never be too grown up for you to speak freely.
Thank you, son, thank you. The only time I'd speak freely to a young man is about his future.
About him being a success?
Oh. Probably if you become a lawyer, he'll never be rich. I mean, when you're married.
Married? Oh, wait a minute, Dad. I only make $10 a week. I may have my charms, but I'm not that good.
Well, someday you're going to be married. And marriage is the one happiness in the world today that can be spoiled by anticipating it. Many marriages are ruined just that way.
You mean a fella's morality? Being moral?
No, I mean fidelity.
Fidelity to what?
Fidelity to the girl that someday you're going to marry. Somewhere in the world today, there's a girl. Now, perhaps, only a child in pigtails.
Well, then, how could a fella be unfaithful to a girl he hasn't even met yet?
That's very easy. By entering into an illicit romance, you're just inviting yourself to the habit of unfaithfulness. Infidelity is a habit. All too easy to acquire if it begins before marriage. The habit of transferring one's affections from one girl to another is very apt to destroy the ability to bestow those same affections permanently on your wife.
Andy casts his gaze downward. His father's stern look softens to a smile.
I know what you're thinking about. You're thinking the same thoughts I did when my father talked to me. But thanks for listening. Oh, by the way, what's Betsy Booth's address? I brought some things from her grandmother.
Now, at her apartment, Betsy jumps up from a desk.
Judge Hardy! Well, I'm faintly agog with surprise.
I was in town on business. I couldn't go home without seeing you.
It's a repulsive day, isn't it?
Yes. I just had luncheon with Andrew.
How is he?
Fine. Well, except I'm afraid he's decided against going to college.
So am I. I'm not so sure it's because he's so crazy about business life either.
You're right. There's something else. I'm not sure, but I think I have a clue.
I've got the same clue. She's got brown hair and gooey eyes. Her name is Janet Hicks. You say Andy's fine. I'm not jealous. Don't think I'm jealous. I'm sizzling. I just can't stand to see Andy ruining his life because of some female that anybody can tell is a wolfess.
What?
A wolfess. Wolfess. Feminine for wolf.
A wolf?
A wolf. You know, a wolf is the kind of a man that a girl never dates unless she's a wolfess. See?
Yes, I do.
Andy isn't a wolf. I suppose he's done a certain amount of smooching with that Polly Benedict, but he's not the type to let some grim female come along and keep him from going to college and having the kind of future he ought to have. Judge, this is a ghastly situation. We have to get organized and cope with it.
What can I do? Parents are so helpless.
Oh, my sweet Andy and that wolfess with her foxes.
The judge's brow furrows.
Foxes?
Foxes. I've got an idea. You do what you can, and I'm going to do a little work for the cause myself. Foxes, of course.
Now, in a fur shop, Betsy tries on a cape.
No, it's definitely not for me.
I was afraid that one was a little old for you.
Old? Gosh, sometimes I wish a girl could have her face lifted upside down. No, I've told you 100 times, I want a spuzzy little cape with a lot of nyah to it and a fabulous big collar.
Oh, here's Miss Gomez now.
I'm sorry, Miss Booth. There's nothing in stock that answers your description.
Yes, but you did have. I saw a priceless one on a girl, and it had your label. Would you mind going back and looking it up and seeing who it's charged to? Maybe I can buy it from her.
We can't give out that information. I can get the style number, though, and we could have one made up for you like it.
Betsy turns to the sales girl.
Miss Dean, could you tell me privately what the girl's name was?
I'd get fired for telling, but the coat was charged to a Mr. P. McW. He's a lawyer, and his office is 119 Wall Street.
Mr. P. McW.
Now, a name on a glass office door reads, Paul McWilliams, attorney at law. Betsy enters. Inside, a low railing separates her from a secretary. Betsy stands at its waist-high gate.
Please, I'd like to see Mr. Paul McWilliams.
What's the nature of your business?
Well, it's definitely of a very personal nature, and I've just got to see him.
Mr. McWilliams is busy. I could make an appointment for you for Monday.
No, I've just got to see him today, or else.
Betsy rushes through the gate and into an office.
Oh, wait a minute. You can't go in there.
Inside, a man lies on a couch.
Now, don't interfere. I'm from the telegraph company.
Nonsense. They don't have girl messengers.
They most certainly do. They couldn't find enough boy sopranos. Happy birthday to you, happy birthday to you, happy birthday, dear Paul, happy birthday to you.
What's this?
Well,
It's a new service at the Telegraph Company. You can have the maddest birthday greetings, soprano, tenor, boogie, swing.
But it's not my birthday.
Do you want to have me fired?
What shall I do, Mr. McWilliams?
Somebody's got mixed up on a gag. Never mind.
Happy birthday to you.
As the secretary leaves, Betsy watches over her shoulder.
Happy birthday, dear Paul. Happy birthday to you.
Now, what is this all about?
Well, this particular greeting is signed Janet Hicks.
Paul's brow furrows.
Sit down, young lady.
Thank you.
They sit side by side on the couch. Nighttime. Miss Hicks and Andy stride down the sidewalk arm in arm. Miss Hicks wears her fox coat over a formal gown, and Andy wears a white dinner jacket. As they step up to Miss Hicks' building, she holds out her keys for him. Andy picks the right key and unlocks the front door. As Miss Hicks strolls inside, Andy follows to her apartment door. With a dapper flourish, Andy pinches a second key on the ring. A broad grin crosses his lips as he unlocks the door. Miss Hicks flashes him a coy smile and disappears into the apartment. Andy's grin vanishes, and he cautiously enters. Inside, Miss Hicks flips on the lights and closes the door behind him.
Awfully nice place you have here.
Why not? I'm nice, aren't I?
Jenny, you're super.
Miss Hicks raises her eyebrows and turns her shoulder toward Andy. He slides off her fur coat, and they embrace in a passionate kiss.
Right now, I think the greatest man that ever lived was the fellow who invented Saturday night.
And Sunday.
Who's that?
Somebody from upstairs. You can't get in from the outside without a key. You know that. Whoever it is, I'll get rid of them.
She opens the door. It's Paul.
What are you doing here?
I'm sorry to interrupt, Janet, but I tried to reach you by phone at the office 3 times today.
You can call me Monday.
We'll settle this now. You charge the Silver Fox coat to my account.
Now, wait a minute, Paul.
Don't bother to lie about it. You can't make a fool out of me as easily now as you could when we were living together. The store's promised to take this back.
You put that coat down.
I will not. We may still be legally married, but I don't owe you any $700 fur coats, and I suggest you don't make me go to court and prove it.
What right have you got to come here and insult me?
In self-defense. It'll be a year before I'm out of debt for your vicious extravagance. Now you behave yourself or you'll be sorry.
He glances toward Andy.
Excuse me, son.
As Paul leaves, Miss Hicks glares at him, clenching her fists. With a sigh, she heads for a couch and plops down. Andy watches her across the room, then slowly approaches.
That was your husband?
Oh, forget it. My marriage didn't mean a thing.
He reluctantly sits beside her.
I never really wanted to marry him, but the darn fool kept whining around till I did him a favor.
I'm not worried about him. Not really.
Then what are you?
She leans to nuzzle him, then backs away.
Say, your father gave me a dirty look in the office today. Did he say anything about me? Oh, I see. You don't have to tell me. I can spot those holier-than-thou people a mile off.
My father's not like that. He's a good sport.
Don't tell me. I've known dozens of them. You've got to learn, darling. A lot of people put on a big show about right thinking and right living and right this and right that. When you're young, you believe them. Then when you grow up, you find out that they preach one thing and do another. You can bet your father is laughing up his sleeve every time he talks to you like that.
She kisses Andy's cheek.
Come on, honey. Get wise to yourself. We'll have fun.
I don't ever want to have any fun if I have to believe things like that. I'm sorry, but I don't feel much like making love to anybody.
Andy gets to his feet and shoves his hands in his pockets. Daytime. At the Carvel train station, Betsy steps off a train and rushes to Judge Hardy. They hug.
Wow. Hi there, Judge Hardy.
Hello,
Betsy. Oh, everything's wonderful, isn't it? Andy's risen above that gun girl, and we're all organized for college, aren't we?
Where is Andy?
Where is he? You mean he didn't come home? Well, he checked out of City House Saturday night. I thought sure he'd dash right straight home. Judge, this is awful.
Oh, checking out a city house, that could mean nothing at all.
Judge! Judge Hardy! Can you come here a minute?
A man sticks his head out of a car window. The judge and Betsy approach.
How are you, Judge?
Well, hello, Mr. Dugan. You remember Betsy Booth.
Yes, growing up, aren't you, Betsy?
You bet your life I am.
I've got something down at the garage that you ought to see, Judge. It's an automobile. A wreck.
A wreck?
Oh, nothing to worry about. Hop into the back seat.
They get in the car. Later, Mr. Dugan leads them into a mechanic's garage.
There it is, Judge.
He points to an old beat-up car stripped of its hood. A mechanic's legs protrude from underneath it.
It's Andy. I know those shoes.
Smiling, they approach the car and look down at the legs. Andy slides out from underneath.
Oh, hi, Dad.
Betsy?
Well, hello there, son.
Hi there, Playmate. I hope it's you.
Yeah, it's me. I've just been having a little trouble with the meat grinder.
Couldn't get along without a car, could you?
Well, that's right. Gotta have wheels.
Andy wears dirty coveralls and his face is smeared with grease.
I'm sorry about yesterday, Dad. I just couldn't get home.
That's all right.
I had to close my affairs in the city, and the hitchhiking didn't get me home as fast as I thought it would. I left New York Saturday night. Evening.
Well, don't blame for hitchhiking this fine weather.
Andy uses a hand crank to start the engine.
Hey! Hooray! Mr. Dugan, it's running. What do you say?
You made a deal.
Andy moves around to the side of the car and tinkers with the engine.
I've been working all night on this little buggy, and Mr. Dugan said if I ever got it to run again, then he'd give me a job.
Job?
Yeah, I know a lot about cars, and it pays $2 a week more than say, a job in an office where you have to do a lot of things. Do you think that Mom might have enough lunch for me?
Well, I imagine she could dig up some cold beans or something. Might be a good idea if you washed up first.
Oh, I'll be clean in a jiffy.
Well, here, you're going to need some help.
They head toward the washroom. Andy answers a wall phone.
Dugan's Garage Service Department. Well, ma'am, if we can't make your car run, we'll sell you one that will. Well, you bring it right in. Thank you. Mr. Dugan said he'd give me a commission on any new trade I dug up.
As they enter the washroom, Betsy hops into the passenger seat of Andy's car. Meanwhile, the judge helps Andy take off his coveralls.
Now then, as one man to another.
Funny thing about that man-to-man business. When you're a kid, you always want to talk to your father man-to-man, but all of a sudden you realize that only a kid would want to do that.
Well, then, father to son. Don't forget behind the ears.
I won't.
Andy washes his face and neck.
That's better. Now, tell me, son, do you need any financial help?
No, I figure if I can hold down this job, then I can get all my debts paid off and get my new car back by September 24th.
Well, that's fine. Why, what's September 24th?
Well, that's the day that Wainwright College opens.
Andrew. My goodness, it's just marvelous how you adhere to dirt.
He rubs Andy's neck with a towel.
Dad, how old does a fella have to be before he doesn't have to explain things to his father if he feels that he's okay?
Just about your age.
Thanks. Because I decided upon going to college because I've had kind of a terrible experience. And I learned that a fella should go ahead and do what he should do in this world and not the things that are, well, the biggest and the most fun and exciting.
Well, you mean like the Frobisher boy wanted to do? Oh, I know about that, too.
You know, I was only a kid when I left Carville, but now I see things much clearer. And I'm never going to make that mistake again. Well, let's go home to Mom, huh?
Andy grabs his hat, coat, and tie, and they head out.
Oh, Andy. You get your car started. I want to make a telephone call.
Yes, sir.
As Judge Hardy puts change into the payphone on the wall, Andy gets into the driver's seat beside Betsy. She smiles at him as he starts the engine. The car rocks and shakes.
Hooray!
Betsy, I prefer never to discuss anything that happened in New York.
All right, Andy.
And, I'd like to talk to you about your future. College, for instance.
Very important for youngsters. And another thing, that sunsuit you've been wearing, you're much too young to go around so naked.
Oh, but actually, I'm growing up. Let's face it.
Oh, don't talk like that. Look at me. What did I say? Today I am a man. Now I know it'll be a long time before I'll really be a man. Maybe a year.
All right, I'll play. You be an important young number and I'll stay a little mice. Now, won't we be something to dazzle the troops with?
Meanwhile, with the judge.
Now, remember, Emily, nothing has happened at all. We've got our boy back again.
Well, of course nothing happened at all. And a good thing, too, James Hardy. Now maybe you'll be a little cheerful around the house.
Mrs. Hardy hangs up and sobs. Her face twists into a grimace and her shoulders tremble. In the garage, Judge Hardy turns toward the car. His ear is smudged with a ring of grease. Betsy scoots over as the judge gets in beside her.
Well, look at yourself, Dad. It's remarkable how you adhere to dirt.
He looks in the rearview mirror.
Oh, boy, is this little jalopy in great shape. Just wait till I get her into hide.
Andy drives the car out of the garage.
Second!
The car motors out into the street.
Hi!
The car goes backwards and crashes into the garage wall. Betsy and the judge grimace. Andy holds on to his hat.
I must have got the gears in backwards. I guess I'll never grow up.
Words appear. The end. This film has been described by Descriptive Video Service, a division of the Media Access Group at WGBH, with funding by the U.S. Department of Education. Described by Christopher Flowers and Carrie Dennehy. Read by Pat Lentz. For more about DBS, call 1-800-333-1203. Cast. Louis Stone as Judge Hardy, Mickey Rooney as Andy Hardy, Judy Garland as Betsy Booth, and others.